A sense of some of the front pages and the stories around the world today, with the topic of immigration dominating the British dailies. New government figures showing record number of people moved to Britain last year. Our press reviewer Deeptika Laurent is here to take a look.
Well, Gavin, according to government figures, almost 1.2 million people moved to the UK last year, with about just over 500,000 leaving the UK. So a record net immigration due notably to unprecedented world events in 2022 and the lifting of pandemic restrictions. It's on the front page of the Daily Mirror today. It's reflected also in the 160,000 people who came to the UK under special programs linked to the war in Ukraine and China's repression in Hong Kong. The Tories, though, have been accused of being very complacent, of being incompetent and having no control on immigration policies. That's what their detractors are accusing them of. For the Independent today, though, their editors here in their editorial today say that record net immigration is a good thing. The paper's saying, after all, it's a sign that Britain is attractive and successful to people. The paper even agreeing with former Prime Minister Boris Johnson's plan to create a points-based system to welcome immigrants, but disagreeing with his portrayal of immigrants as a threat, hence why you see Boris Johnson rather unlikely dressed up as Tina Turner singing his version of What's Love Got to Do With It, but it's called What's Lies Got to Do With It. Gavin.
I couldn't possibly comment. Moving to Turkey, because, 50 million people just over that voted in the first round. The second runoff is coming up on Sunday. It will be a surprise if the opposition were to win, though.
That's right. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the incumbent president, is expected to win, although albeit by a fairly narrow margin. There's an interesting feature article in Foreign Policy today, which takes us into the heart of Kasım Pasa. It's a low-income, working-class neighbourhood of Istanbul, where support for Erdogan is high and where nationalism, it says, will dominate voters and voters' attitudes come Sunday's second round of voting. Nationalism, rather than secularism, that's what the New York Times says in its article, really the preeminent theme for this election. As the New York Times explains, nationalism really is a fruit of 20 years of Erdogan policies, from converting the Hagia Sophia back into a mosque in 2020 to even the culture wars, internationally renowned Turkish dramas, which recast Erdogan's discourse in the antique ages. The article really saying for the past 20 years he's gone to great pains to reorient Turkey's national culture to promote a sort of, quote, neo-Ottoman revival, if you like.
Now, one of the issues with Turkey that might have gone unnoticed, but not today, not by the French sports paper L'Equipe, is how football is becoming politicised and different teams siding with, different choices.
That's right. And also how politics, at least officially, is banned from football, and how a lot of these anti-Erdogan supporters are braving those restrictions to demonstrate their opposition to his politics. This is from L'Equipe, the French sports paper, which goes into the heart of a club called the Beşiktaş. Their supporters who often use matches and stadiums to show their opposition to Erdogan and his presidency. Some of them of Kurdish origin, they systematically, for instance, chant anti-Erdogan slogans during matches. Last February, just after the devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria, they threw thousands of stuffed toys, cuddly toys, onto the pitch to protest the government's very slow response in helping survivors from that earthquake, one which also killed a shocking number of children. Their actions all the more courageous because, as I said, political slogans are officially banned from football matches.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because the domain of football used to belong, it seemed, to Erdogan. Before he became president, it was thought that he might be a footballer. He trialled with Fenerbahce. His dad told him to go the other way. So we'll keep across that. But I also want to talk about something that we trailed in our headlines as well. This anti-abortion sticker campaign that, if you've taken a bike recently or rent a bike anywhere in Paris, you might have seen it plastered everywhere. What's going on there?
Well, it's something that the papers are talking about today. Libération brings this story, Gavin. It took place on the night of Wednesday to Thursday this week, where a group had stuck anti-abortion stickers onto a whole bunch of Vélib bikes, those rental bikes you can see all around Paris. The pictures featured the slogan, if you let them live, and you saw sort of three images from fetus to child trailing behind someone riding a bike, but very much reprising the graphics of Vélib's, of the Vélib company. So it looked very much like it was an actual campaign of Vélib, which it was not. Abortions, as you can imagine, the stickers sparked outrage from government level, but also to user levels on social media. Some of them even posting videos of them covering up those stickers, because here in France, abortion rights are a very sacred thing. They are safe, they are free, they are also anonymous for anyone who wants them. The campaign is from a group called the Survivors, who say they are revolted by the suffering of abortions. But safe to say, this was a rather short-lived publicity stunt.
Now, moving on to a story which is a good day to cover it, a Friday, because we've had the national or the International Wine Challenge Awards and the best Cabernet Sauvignon, not a French winery. Tell us more.
Well, it's the whole reason I'm talking about this is because just a chance to plug Australian wines as an Australian, really, Gavin, I'll be honest. The Guardian tells us that a South Australian Cabernet Sauvignon, or Cab Sav for Australian speak, picked up the best Cabernet Sauvignon trophy at the International Wine Challenge Awards, a British-based competition that sees eight judges blind taste, get this, each of the 6,000 entries. They did so back in April. They had no information on the producer or the price. The wines which scored a rating of more than 95 out of 100 were then sort of progressed to the national round, then the international round. And this humble Cab Sav from a South Australian winery, the 2021 Redoc Pastoralist wine, it beat wines from more than 20 countries to win the International Cabernet Sauvignon Trophy. The best thing of all, this wine only costs $40, Gavin, so it's really proof that the quality of the wine is not in the price, but in the bottle itself.
Wow, I've been a Belgian beer man for many years. It's only about €3 a beer, so maybe I could be persuaded. It was a good sales pitch from you, Deepti Laurent, our international press reviewer. Well, we'll be back in a few moments. Stay with us. We'll have all the world's news here on France 24.